ourselves and extending us outside of our comfort zone, because when we reach, it takes us out of our comfort zone. And I don't know anybody better that gets outside of his comfort zone than Pastor Jimmy. He's a guy and his wife, we've met over 20-some years ago. And Jimmy was a professor at Oral Roberts University for 6 years and taught over 12 different courses. He has organized over 150 mission trips all around the world in 50 different countries. He has planted and pastored a church for 9 years. And he has founded Project Doxa, which he's going to talk to us a little bit about this throughout his message. And he's supported missionaries over 10 different countries. So this is a guy that not only knows the stuff, but he's also doing what he knows. And he's teaching others how to reach beyond themselves. So would you join me in welcoming Pastor Jimmy Shaw from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Man, it is so good to be here with you guys. I am so honored to be able to be here and get a chance to share this morning. I'm really looking forward to this. We've been looking forward to this for a while. And since I got to come to Kodiak in November, that was really a fun trip for me to get to be here. And I get to bring my wife with me, which is a rare treat for me. And so we just left the kids in Colorado. Hopefully they're okay. And I'm sure they are. We left them with my aunt and my grandmother. And we're so excited to be here with you guys this morning. I'll tell you a little bit about me as we get through kind of my talk this morning, but just about our ministry. We have these little brochures and stuff that are out in the lobby out there that tell you a little bit about where we are, what we're doing, some different things. And so I think I brought like 50 of them, so take as many of them as you want. That's all I had left. And then I have some business cards and stuff out there also if you want to reach out. They have our web address, and the best way to kind of keep track of our ministry is to, you know, follow one of us on social media or something like that. So or you can look at our website. So kind of what we do with Project Doxa is we send missionaries all around the world. We have projects that we support. We help raise money for different missionary projects. And then throughout the course of my life, I've kind of connected with different people in different parts of the world. And the Lord led us to start Project Doxa in some ways to help fund Kingdom Mission and connect people with different missions groups around the world. And so we're taking teams. If you're interested in going, we can help you take care of that. If you're looking for a place to support, we have lots and lots of missionaries that are in need of support, and so we challenge everybody all the time to pray and to send and to go, and I think that's something that all of us can do. And so anyway, we'll get into that in just a little bit. You can find out more information, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody who wants to talk about that after. All right, commercial over. Okay, so I always feel awkward about doing all that stuff. Like, hey, this is the stuff that we do. It's really exciting. We're happy to do it. But I'm really excited to open the scripture with you this morning, to be honest. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the life of Peter. And Peter's an interesting character because Peter's a fisherman, right? And I figure you guys know a little something about fishermen here on the island. And I think it's kind of an interesting thing because fishermen kind of get a bad rap. Sometimes they deserve it. And historically, it's kind of been that way. They tend to be people prone to kind of crass language, occasional violence, sometimes scars on their knuckles from stupid fights, you know. And I know this because my father was a fisherman, and I grew up with a different kind of fisherman, right? I'm from Oklahoma, a landlocked place, but we have lots of lakes and streams and all of that fun stuff. And so we do a kind of different kind of fishing than you might do here on the island. In fact, the ocean is terrifying to me, but we don't have to get into that. But I want to talk about Peter because Peter was a fisherman. He's a lot like my father. I grew up in this kind of environment with my dad's kind of a rough guy. I don't know if you know people like this in your life. But for him, you know, if he lives in it, he built it. If he ate it, he probably killed it. Most of what I encountered as discipline as a child would probably garner the attention of the state these days. You know, but I love my father. He taught me a lot of stuff, lots and lots of things. He was like John Wayne, you know. He was always waking me up on Saturday mornings before dawn, you know, and saying, "You're burning daylight. You know, we have to go and build some random thing." And for a while, he decided he wanted to become like a rabbit person. And so we had rabbits, like bunches of them, hundreds of them. And so he was always building these cages for the rabbits. And one time he was building a rabbit cage, and he was using an air compressor staple gun, and he stapled himself to the rabbit cage. And he said some things I won't repeat in church, okay? And he called for me to come and get a saw and, like, saw him off of the cage. All right, he was a rough dude, and I sawed him off the cage, and he went with part of the cage to the hospital. It was exciting times. He was building something another time, and he had one of those radial saws. You guys know what I'm talking about, the little thing there. And he took the guard off the radial saw because that just got in his way. And he has this really nice long scar on his leg, as you can imagine how that got there. And he's got a quarter that stopped the blade of the radial saw and saved his life. And mine too, because that was pre-Jimmy, so that was exciting. It's a very important quarter in my life, okay? My father kind of ruined me for eating, like, fried fish at a restaurant, okay? Like, back where I'm from, they do catfish, and some people do it well, and some people do it poorly, you know? And he was a catfisherman. That's what he liked to do, and he would always make fun of guys who fish for bass because the bass fishermen came from the city, and they had their, like, fancy boats, and they really wanted to just drive fast, and that was kind of his thing. And so they would do a fishing they called trot lining. And I don't know if you're familiar with this here, but what they would do is they would string a line across the lake, and they put these weights on the lake and then or on the line, and then every so often they'd have perch that they caught with these really big hooks, and they would put the thing across the whole lake, and it would go all the way to the bottom, and they'd catch catfish, and you'd kind of run along the line. But from the time I was really little, he told me, you know, we would go run the line, and he would make me carry a pocket knife. Okay, I was 6 years old. And I had a pocket knife in my pocket, and this is what he would tell me. He'd say, "Now listen, if you get caught with the hook and you go overboard, you're going to the bottom of the lake, you got to cut the line." And I thought, wow, this is great. So it was exciting. You guys maybe understand why I'm afraid of the water. We don't have to get into that. One day he hooked himself with one of those hooks, and I thought, well, that's it for the fishing for today, but it turned out it wasn't. He just pushed it right on through, clipped it, and taped it up with electrical tape, and we just kept going. And you say, well, why are we talking about your dad, man? He sounds like a crazy guy. Because my dad's a lot like Peter. Okay? When you read the story about Peter in the Bible, if you just read it from the end, you know Peter's going to preach sermons. He's going to do some stuff. But when God calls Peter, this is the guy he calls. All right? He's not the guy, the professional guy writing the scripture. He's calling the guy who's out here in the middle of the boat. Okay? And I want you to remember that, because here's what we do. We hear a story about somebody in the scripture and we say, yeah, but that's because that's somebody in the Bible. That's some fancy person there. That's some spiritual person there. God's calling people like Peter. And I think this is an important thing. So we're going to spend a little bit of time in Luke chapter 5, just a few verses here. And we're going to talk about Jesus' call of Peter. Because what happens here is Jesus is going to interrupt Peter's life. Peter was busy about the things he was doing, and then Jesus encountered him. And I think there's some things there that are relevant to us as we learn what it means to reach. Right? And so this is Luke chapter 5, verse 1. It says, "On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him being Jesus, to hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out of them, and they were washing their nets. And getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's, he said to him, 'Put out a little from the land.' And he sat down and taught the people from the boat." All right, so here's what's happened, okay? Jesus comes walking by, he sees two boats, and he just commandeers one, okay? We're going to find out that Peter's been fishing all night long. We'll get to that in a second. And Jesus says, "Hey, I'm going to borrow your boat," and he pushes out a little bit here, and then he gives everybody a sermon. Everybody who's been working all night long and caught nothing loves to get a sermon in the morning, right? That's how that goes, right? The next verse, he says, "And when he had finished speaking," verse 4, "he said to Simon, 'Hey, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch.' And Simon answered, 'Master, we toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I will let down the nets.'" So what's happening here? Jesus is saying to Peter, "Hey, push out here. Let's throw the nets in. Let's go fishing." And Peter says politely to Jesus, "Hey, you're the teacher. I'm the fisherman. We fished all night. We didn't catch anything. Okay, there are no fish to be had." You know, people don't like fishing. They like catching. Do you understand? And so he was saying to him, "No, I don't think I'm going to do that." And then kind of, I think this is the thing that runs through Peter's head. He thinks, maybe we'll go out. Maybe we'll toss the nets over. Just take a minute. We'll show Jesus there's no fish. We'll come back. Half hour. I'm in bed. No problem. Right? You ever do this? You ever reluctantly obey the Lord? Okay, Lord, I'll just do that. We'll show you who's right. Then we'll be back, and then everything will be fine. And they go out. Okay? And some of you know this story. Verse 6, it says, when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. And they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats so that they both began to sink. So here is Peter thinking he's just going to kind of do a quick one. We'll go out. We'll toss the nets in the water. We're going to show Jesus there's no fish. We fished all night. There's no fish. No problem. And he throws them in. He's like, wait a minute. We've got some fish. Hey, we need some help over here. And they bring the other boat. And there's so many fish, it almost sinks two boats. Okay? And Peter's like, okay, this is not normal. Right? This is not something that's normal. This is a crazy thing. And Jesus is sending a message just to him. Okay? And it's an important thing. And Peter's response has always kind of struck me as odd. Okay? He doesn't celebrate. He's not saying, wow, look at all this amazing fish. What does he say? In verse 8. He said, when Simon Peter saw it, he fell at his knees and said, depart from me, O Lord. I'm a sinful man. You ever think about this passage? When I read this, it just really shook me. Because I think about this, what an odd response. So here Peter has had this powerful encounter. Jesus has done this really great miracle in this moment. And Peter's response is, hey, depart from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. Let me translate that for you, okay? Hey, Jesus, I don't know who you're looking for, but it's not me. You're looking for somebody else. I don't know what you're planning to do. I get it, you're the teacher. I get it, you pulled everybody out here and like all the fish and this crazy thing and you're doing miracles and all of that stuff. But I'm a sinful man and you must be looking for somebody else. And this has always struck me because it was exactly who I was. It was exactly my story. When I felt like God began to call me, my first response was like, oh Lord, you're looking for somebody else. You know, depart from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. And, you know, people aren't always excited about the moment that God interrupts their life. You guys remember that Moses takes all the people of Israel, he takes them all out into the wilderness, and it says God's going to come down on the mountain, and what do the people say? Hey, Moses, you go talk to God, or we're going to die. You know? This stuff happens throughout, right? Isaiah sees a vision of the Lord. He falls on his face and says, woe to me, I'm undone. I'm a man of unclean lips. I dwell among a people of unclean lips. I am sinful. What is happening here, right? I'm wrecked. My favorite story of this actually happens in 1 Samuel chapter 5. The Philistines have captured the Ark of the Covenant. They brought it over here and they put it in a room with kind of all of their gods, you know? And one of their gods is called Dagon. And they come in the next morning and Dagon's on his face before the Ark. And they're like, that's weird. Somebody toppled over Dagon. So they stand him back up. And then they leave. And they come back the next morning, and Dagon's on his face, and his head is broken off, and his hands are broken off. And what do the Philistines conclude? We got to get rid of the ark. Because it's messing with our idolatry. It's messing with our gods. God is encountering us, and the things that we worship are kind of being toppled over. He's interrupting their life, and they sent him away. You'd think that if God did something in your life, we would welcome him, but that's not what happens. And so Peter falls at his knees and says, depart from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. You're looking for somebody else, not me. Okay? The first excuse that he offers. And Jesus says to him something so powerful. You've heard this a million times, right? Verse 10 says, and so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, the partners of Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and they followed him. I've always thought that was such a powerful story. Here he has this encounter. He tells Jesus to go away. You're looking for somebody else. And Jesus says, no. You've been after the wrong thing. All this time you thought you were about catching fish. Now you're going to catch men. And they left everything and followed him. And I love it. Okay? You know, when Peter follows Jesus, he has no idea what's in store for him. You know, we know the rest of the story. We know that one day he'll see Jesus transfigured on the mountain. We know one day he'll walk on the water. One day he'll whack off some guy's ear. One day he'll preach a sermon. 3,000 people come to know the Lord. One day he'll write some stuff that we read as scripture. But in that moment, all he knows is that the Savior has called him and he obeys. He leaves everything to follow him. He leaves a sure fortune to follow him. And so I have some lessons here that I think I want to get into from this story that I think would be really helpful for us, because I think there's some stuff here that will really help us. And the first is this. When we look in the mirror, we don't see everything that's there. spend his whole life mending nets, but Jesus saw something different. If he looked in the mirror, he thought fisherman, but Jesus saw something different. He saw who he could be in the eyes of the kingdom. He saw more than just a fisherman. And the Bible's full of these stories where God decides to enlist the least likely people for kingdom service. You know? Now, we know the end of their story. We know who they will become. But if you could put yourself in the spot when they were called, right? When God calls Abraham, Abraham's not perfect. He's so fearful that he might be killed for his wife, he lies and says it's his sister. Then Isaac, his son, does exactly the same thing. They have a child. Isaac has a child named Jacob, whose name literally means deceiver. And God decides to name the whole country after him. Right? How about Samson? He has what we might call a problem with the ladies, right? And God still uses him mightily. Paul, he's literally in the midst of murdering Christians when God calls him. He's on his way. The first time we hear about him, it says he was standing there while they were stoning Stephen, and his job was to like, hey, I'll hold your coat so you can throw the rocks harder and faster. And God calls him. He writes 2/3 of the New Testament. How about David, the lying, murdering adulterer? Who God calls a man after his own heart. See, so many of these people, we know who they become, but in the moment that God calls them, they would not have seen this themselves. David in particular, he is so least likely that even his own father doesn't see it. Samuel comes to David's house, to Jesse's house, and he says, one of your sons will be the next king. And they parade his sons, one right after the other, in front of Samuel. And Samuel says, no, not this one, not this one, not this one. Where are the rest of your sons? Not this one. He said, is this all of them? And Jesse's like, well, we got one more. I mean, he's out with the sheep. Even his own father doesn't see it. And Samuel says something so powerful. He says, God doesn't see what man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And I think that's such a powerful, powerful story for us. Okay? In our house, there are a few phrases you're not allowed to say. We don't let this kid say, I can't. What we train them to say is, I can't yet. You know? There are some things you can't do, okay? But there are some things you can't do yet. You know? And I think that's an important thing. No one, I'd better say in my house also, I'm bored. Okay? Like, look, if you say, apparently I struck a nerve, huh? Listen, if you say I'm bored close enough where Beth can hear you, we will have a problem, okay? Like the children just won't say it. They're like, I'm so, you know, they just don't say it out loud, okay? And you know what else we don't let them say? We don't ever let them say anything that starts with, I am just. I'm just a mom. I'm just a this. I'm just a that. You're not just anything. The scripture says you're a person for whom Christ died. And as long as you're breathing, right, you have unlimited kingdom potential. You know, Peter would have just said, I'm just a fisherman. And Jesus said, no, that's just who you think you are. That's who you are right now. That's not who you will be. Right? The second thing we learn from this, I think, is that the reason that Jesus interrupts Peter's life was for people. From now on, you will catch men, right? Revelation 7 describes this multitude of humanity from every tongue, tribe, and nation gathered around the throne saying, worthy is the Lamb. People from every place, every nation, every nationality, every language, from all around the globe gathered around. It's this like multi-ethnic multitude, so big nobody can number. That's the reason Jesus interrupts people's lives. I think it's a powerful thing. If all that mattered, by the way, which is getting people saved and ensuring that they made it to heaven, we just hold you under a little longer when we baptize you. You come out of the water with a mission. Part of the mission is to be a part of bringing that untold number of people from all over the world into the kingdom. And I think that is a powerful reality for us. Can I share some numbers with you? I think this is interesting. In 100 AD, so about 70, 80 years after the time of Jesus, there was one Christian for every 1,000 people. Okay? 200 years later, in 300 AD, there was one Christian for every 250 people. In 1900, there was one Christian for every 25 people. In the year 2000, there was one Christian for every 6 people. The gospel is spreading through the whole earth. Now, what that means is there's about 1 billion people around the globe today that profess the name of Christ, and about 6.5 billion that don't. 1 billion people, by the way, 1 billion Christians living now, is more than all the Christians that have ever lived. There are more Christians on earth than in heaven. It's a stunning reality. We have an army untold. ready to do kingdom work, and yet 6.5 billion is an unimaginable number of lost people. Okay? And people think some of that stuff is so far away, and some of it is, but you know the truth is, in terms of unchurched people total number, the United States is the 5th largest mission field in the world. If you took all of the unchurched people in the United States and made them their own country, it would be the 7th largest country in the world. I live in a city that some people refer to as the buckle of the Bible Belt. We have more than 250,000 non-believers in our city. 400,000. It's a stunning thing, you know? And in some parts of the world, it's as little as one full-time Christian worker for every 1 million Muslims in the Middle East. These are stunning realities about where we are today, and this stuff just keeps me up at night. God's plan to reach this untold multitude is interrupting the lives of people just like you and just like me. Except that's not exactly accurate, because it's not people just like you and just like me. It's you and it's me. And it's so easy for us sometimes to say, yeah, but that's for that guy, and that's for this lady, and these people over here, they're the ones who God's going to call. Guys, Peter is just a fisherman. You know? And he's the people that God calls. We are the people just like him, okay? The third thing I would tell you about this story is that leaving your nets requires a measure of courage. Because this is about the point in the talk when somebody says to me, yeah, that's easy for you to say. You're a missionary. You're a pastor. But I have news for you, okay? Do you know there was a moment in every pastor's life before they were a pastor? And there's not a whole lot of those guys that, like, came out of the womb saying, someday, Lord, let me be a pastor. They had a plan for something else. And the Lord interrupted their life. And they answered the call. You know, when I was a kid, this is a little bit of my story. When I was a kid, I watched Top Gun. I hear they're remaking Top Gun, which is super exciting for me. But I really wanted to fly jets off an aircraft carrier. That was like my dream. I probably shouldn't have been watching that at like 6 years old, but it doesn't matter. I did. And though I was raised in church, I really never had a real encounter with the Lord, my own. I grew up in a town of 1,300 people. My church had 16 old people and me. And my brother. My grandparents were believers. They brought us to church. My parents were not. And they brought us anyways. I never had a youth group experience. I never did any of that stuff. I never met a Christian within a year of my age until I went to college. Turns out there were some in my hometown, but they were undercover. Wish they had not been. But they were. And so I had this plan, right? I was going to fly jets off an aircraft carrier. So I was accepted into the Air Force Academy and the Naval Academy in West Point out of high school. And that was my plan. I was a good athlete back in the day, and I got invited to go to a church camp because I was like the Bible trivia ringer, okay? So these people knew I was in church. I was had a Sunday school class, just me, and so I like know the Bible really well, even though I hadn't really had a powerful encounter with the Lord on my own yet. And I went to this church camp because they had a Bible trivia contest, and this church thought I could win, so they paid for me to come. You know, fine, no problem. I get here and I'm like, there are other Christians that are young. This is amazing. And I was in the midst of a service one night, and I had this powerful encounter with the Lord. And I was just on my knees crying as the Lord was speaking to me. And I felt like God told me to go to school at ORU. I went to school at Oral Roberts to study theology and not to play ball anymore. I was a recruited baseball player. And so I went through this whole thing, and this lady who was working at the cafeteria at this church camp, this tiny church camp, she was praying for me, and she said, young man, you know where you're supposed to go, right? And I said, yes, ma'am. She said, you know what you're supposed to do? And I said, yeah, I do. And I turned down my offers to the other schools, and I drove myself to Tulsa and ended up at ORU. I'd never been there before. And I remember getting there my first semester and being in campus, and they had a service. They said, we're going to have this week is Missions Chapel. And I thought, fantastic. We're going to have an old guy and a slideshow, and it's going to be awesome. Because that's what happened in the church where I grew up. We had like an old guy, he would come. He had like a legit slide thing. And this is like after the time, but that was what you needed to have. But that's what he had. And they would put up the slides and they would say, yeah, we go and we drive our bus to Guatemala. And I thought, this is fantastic. And they said, no, we're going to tell you about where you can go and serve the Lord in missions. And I said, I don't understand what you mean. And he said, we take teams every summer all over the world. We're going to take them all over the place. And I said, I don't understand. I don't. It does not compute. You know? Because what's crazy about this thing, you know, at that time, when I came to school at ORU, I had never seen a $100 bill. I'd never even seen one physically, right? never had $20 of my own. My parents would give me $20 every 2 weeks, and that was $10 for gas and $10 for a haircut. So I shaved my head and thought I was rich. And so when I went to this meeting, they said, no, we're going to tell you about all these places you can go. I went to the meeting, and they're telling us, well, we're sending teams to Africa. We're sending teams to Asia and Europe. I thought, this is fantastic. You know, and then it started to come back in the back of my head, like, they're probably going to make me pay for this, right? Like, they're not just going to let me go. And they said, yeah, you have to raise $2,500. And I was like, ah, great. Might as well be a million. I don't have $2,500. How am I going to get this? And they said, you know what? You're going to send out letters, and people are going to help support you. And I thought, really? That's really a thing. You send out letters, you pray, people support you. And so I wrote the letters just like everybody else. We sent the whole thing out, and I got back $0. You know, now at ORU, still I help train the students. They give them all $1, so no one has to look down and see, like, zero on their sheet. Anyway, so I get all the way to the 50% deadline. I'm meeting with the team. We're praying and trusting the Lord. And guys, the day before a 50% was due, I had $0. Zero. Literally zero. And I went to my team leader and I said, hey, man, this has been fun. I really enjoyed this. You guys are really cool. It must be really cool to go on this trip, but I got no money. And they said, well, just stick it out. Maybe the Lord will provide. Don't quit. Make them kick you off the team, you know? And I thought, okay. And you know, a couple people who didn't have the money sacrificed for me to go on my first trip. One of them wrote a check for half my trip the next day. And he said, you know, we want to invest in your life. I only got 4 donations, and it was enough for me to go on the first trip. That was summer of 99. It was 115 trips ago, 50 countries ago. I remember saying to the Lord, like, if you open the door, I'll go. Right? I didn't know he was going to open the door a lot. I thought it was just kind of that summer, you know. But here's what happens. You say, like, yeah, but that's for somebody else, but that's what I thought too. I can't be the guy who's going to do this. I had no plan for this stuff. I had other stuff I really wanted to do. But it requires a measure of courage to obey the Lord. It requires a measure of courage to trust the Lord. Because here's the thing, right? Fear comes naturally, but courage requires like a choice. You know? It's almost always a choice made in the face of our fears. You know, through the providence of the Lord, I've been able to help train missions students every summer now for a long, long time. I've been involved in our missions program at ORU since 99. And one of the things we do is we take all of these students before they go on a trip, we take them through a challenge course, like a ropes course, like team building elements. And some of that stuff is just like some activities, but some of it is like we strap them in harnesses and put them on the top of trees and stuff and kind of mess with them a little bit. Because, you know, they're going to encounter some stuff that they're afraid of as they travel. That's part of it. And so what's interesting is we tell them all the time this really interesting phrase. I tell them, listen, it's okay to be afraid. I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. Like, it's okay to be afraid. I know you're afraid. If you weren't afraid, that would be weird. I know you're afraid, but I want you to do it anyway. Okay? Now, one of the last times I gave that talk wasn't to my mission students. It was actually to my family. I don't know about you guys. Some of you guys maybe are like beach people or mountain people for vacation, but the Shaws are roller coaster people, okay? And so what we do for our vacation is we drive across the country to Ohio, and we ride roller coasters. And when my kids were small, okay, my kids are all been large compared to some people, but they're, that's not at all a joke. Like, I'm not picking on anybody who's short, okay, but my kids are really tall for their age, and my youngest, when she was 6, was tall enough to ride all the roller coasters. Now, usually you're more like 9 or 10 when you're tall enough to ride all the roller coasters, but she was just really tall, and she thought she was going to be off the hook, like, hey, I'm only 6, I don't have to ride the big rides, but she got up there, and they put the little thing over here, like, trying to put it over her head, and it, like, stopped. She's, like, tall enough, and she had this moment realizing, like, oh, no, like, I'm going to have to do this, and I said, hey, babe, it's okay to be afraid. I want you to do it anyway, and she said, okay, Daddy. So she get in the line with me, and she said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I said, no, no, babe, it's going to be fine. And so we go a little farther, and she'd look up. She said, I don't want to do this. This is terrible. Why are you making me do this, you know? And I was like, you just have to trust me. It's going to be fine. And we got all the way up to the very edge, you know, where we're like the next people in line. She sees, like, the car go away. She looks up there, like, no, 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 just look at me, you know? And so we get in the car. They strap her in, and she's like, I don't want to do this, you know? Okay? But at this point, I don't know what to tell her. Like, she's strapped in. She's going over the ride. And we start up the slow the slow thing going up the mount, up the like hill, right, the first hill, and we're at a place like legit roller coasters, okay? It's a 300-foot-tall roller coaster, and so we're going up the thing, and she starts to scream, okay? And she's just freaking out. Everybody in the whole park can hear her scream, and we go over the first hill. She's still screaming, but you start to hear what she's saying then. She's yelling, "I'm so scared. This is so awesome." You know what, man? You can't keep her off the roller coasters now. Like, if you ask her, her name is Eden. Eden, what do you want to do this summer? Let's go back to Cedar Point. We want to ride the roller coasters. Okay? Because that's like her favorite thing in the whole world. But in the moment, it wasn't her favorite thing. In the moment, her thing was just the fear that she saw. And you know the metaphor, right? You see it? Like the simple faith of a child trusting that her father won't put her in harm's way. Right? That she'll enjoy the adventure if she can get over the fear of this circumstance. And I think there's so many people who are believers that hear a message like this and they say, "That sounds great, but a thousand things. If you could just get past the one thing. If you could just like be afraid and still do it, you just might find that your faith is more vibrant, that you're not hearing about these things that God does, you're experiencing them." And I think that's a powerful thing. Two more points here. The next is this, that people who are people of faith, they deal in the currency of opportunities, not guarantees. You see what happens here? Peter doesn't know what's coming. He just leaves everything to follow Jesus. He has no idea where he's going. And someone says, "Are you coming back?" "I don't know. I'm just going to follow him." He like sunk the boats, man. What am I supposed to do? He knew who I was and called me anyway. You know, we're expected, like trained to expect money back guarantees. If we don't like something, just take it back. But there are no guarantees in kingdom life, just opportunities. Can I guarantee you that leaving your nets will be safe? I really can't. Safety is kind of an illusion, you know? I like to tell people safety is a little bit like gated airplanes or seatbelt or gated communities and seatbelts on an airplane. The seatbelts on the airplane don't make you safe. They make you feel safe, and that's not the same thing. You understand? Some of you understand. You know? Can I guarantee you that taking a big risk for the kingdom will work out? I can't. But it's worth it anyways. It's worth it anyways. You know? I love this story from 1 Samuel 14. The Philistines are encamped around the people of Israel. They're in trouble, and they know it. Jonathan says to his armor bearer, "Come, let us go up to the garrison of the Philistines. It may be that the Lord will work for us." He's saying, like, it looks bad because it's bad, okay? But we're going to take a risk, and it just might be that God shows up and does something great in our life. Now, I don't know about you guys, but in my life, some of the most powerful moments of my life have been when I've taken a big risk, afraid in the moment, and did it anyways. That's all that the Lord would do. When the Lord began to deal with us about planting a church some years ago, I was pretty terrified. You know, I was 2 years as a volunteer on the church staff, 2 years part-time, 2 years full-time, and it felt like God was calling us to plant a church, and so we just did it, okay? And people were like, "This is crazy. You have no idea what you're doing." And I was like, "Yes, all of this is true." And we started the church in our living room, and some weeks people would show up, and some weeks no one would show up, and there were a lot of weeks that nobody gave anything in the offering, and we somehow ended up with a bunch of Starbucks employees, and they were like taking their pounds of coffee and giving it to us in the offering. I was like, "What do you want me to do with that? I can't sell that." You know? And so we were really discouraged because sometimes it was going well and sometimes it wasn't, and we kept feeling like, okay, now we're getting some momentum, but then we kind of didn't. And after a while, we stopped being able to pay the bills, okay? And it got really, like, real. And in 2007, at the end of 2007, our power got shut off because we couldn't pay the bills. Okay? And then we had an ice storm, okay, at our house. And I sent Beth and the kids to go stay with my in-laws, which was a super, like, humbling thing to do because we had no power in my house. And we had a power outage because of the ice storm, and everybody's power was out. And then someone called me and said, "Hey, is the power back on in your city?" And I was like, "I don't know. You have to ask the neighbors." Because it's not coming back on at my house when it comes back on everywhere else. And I thought, this is really stupid, you know? Why did we do this to ourselves? We left a good church job. Why did I go plant the church? I felt like this is what the Lord called me to do. I didn't understand at the time. And so we made do. We found a way to pay the bills, brought the family back home. But I'm still trying to wrestle with, like, what am I supposed to do about this? And I felt like the Lord, I know it sounds crazy. Can challenged me to go on a hike. You know, I need to go on a hike. And so it was really cold, okay? It was 22 degrees. It was January, early January in 2008. And we just had an ice storm, all this stuff. It was really cold. And I felt like I need to go on a hike. So I told Beth, I'm going on a hike. I'm going by myself. I'm going to, where's the girl who's from Ouachita, where we were talking earlier? Yes, there. She understands. And I said, I'm going to Ouachita. It's like the hills down in southeast Oklahoma. I'm going to go, and I'm going to go hike. And it's middle of the winter, so you know we didn't have short days like you have short days here, but we had a short day Oklahoma style. And I went on the hike, and the whole time I'm hiking, I'm thinking, you know, this is really stupid. I was like, it's going to get dark soon, and I have no idea how cold it's going to get when the darkness comes. And so I had a machete, so I chopped down some trees, and I set them on fire, and I laid beside the thing. It was the longest, coldest, worst night of my life. I thought several times, you know what's going to happen, right? I'm going to freeze to death. Someone's going to find my body out here, and they're going to be like, he died of stupidity. That's what's going to happen, you know? And so, like, I sleep for, like, 30 minutes. I stoke the fire, chopped down another tree, just try to stay warm. When the sun finally started to come up, like, 8:30 or 9 in the morning, I was like, oh, praise the Lord. And I packed up all my stuff, and I started back up over this trail, and there's this lonely road that kind of goes through there. And at the top of the hill, and it's really not a place people travel. You wouldn't really travel there for any real reason. And I get up to the top. I'm wearing this, like, red and black and white camo shirt. I don't know where I would have been camouflaged, but that's where I was wearing. And I come up over the hill, and this guy sees me, and he drives his truck up to me. He said, hey, man, what are you doing? And I said, I'm just taking a walk. He said, would you like a ride? And I said, I would love a ride. I got in the car with the random stranger, and 1 minute into the conversation, he says to me, hey, man, my life's so jacked up, man. You think you could pray for me or something? Think you could tell me something? I began to share the gospel with this guy, and he pulled over on the side of the road. I kid you not, I'm not making this up. Pulled over on the side of the road, and there's a little sign, and it says, Outdoor Air Prayer Place. Okay? All right, I thought, that's odd. And I get out there, and there's a little, like, brick building with, like, a plexiglass wall and little G.I. Joe characters posed in Bible stories on the inside of the plexiglass wall, and it says Bible Museum. It's like a tiny little room. And then there's, like a hill with three crosses and, like a walkway that goes around this little thing, and each of the segments of the concrete has another one of the books of the Bible on it. And so I walk with this guy around this thing, and I shared this story, and I said, you know what, man, I don't know about you, I don't know your story, but in my life, the only thing that's ever made sense was the gospel. And we knelt down out in the middle of there, wind, it's 20-something degrees, wind blowing, and we prayed a prayer I cannot repeat, because it was pretty profane what he said about how the Lord can forgive his stuff, and it was crazy, it was just a moment, and I just had this thought of, like, man, I think the Lord sent me out into the woods to meet a guy. You know what was really weird, right? I had no thought at that moment of, like, it was all wasted. But that's all I thought all night long. I thought, I'm just doing it. I just went out here in the middle of the woods. I felt like I heard the Lord. I just did it. It was really dumb. I'm going to die out here. He left me alone to die out in the woods. They're never going to find my body. You know? And then in the morning, like, I run into this guy, help lead him to the Lord. And I get back in my car. I was so excited. And I drove back to Tulsa. It's a couple-hour drive. And I went to a men's breakfast that week, and somebody at the men's breakfast said, hey, does anybody have anything they want to share? And I said, yeah, I do. I have a story to tell. And I tell this story, and they said, that's amazing. And they said, hey, how's your church going? I was like, we're struggling, man. We have no place to meet. And they said, you know, you can meet in our building. I said, that's great, but I don't have any money. And they said, it's fine. We'll charge you per person that comes. We'll charge you $2 per person that comes. I was like, so if no one comes, I don't owe you any money. He said, yes. And I was like, perfect. All right? And so that's what we did. And that's where we started. And people started to come. We met in a room that was another church's building. They used it for their youth room. It was a former orchestra pit. It was called the pit, literally the pit. So we met in the pit. We didn't have any chairs. We just sat on the little orchestra things. And that's how we started. You know? And we stayed there. I can tell you crazy stories, but we stayed there until somebody stole all the copper pipes out of the air conditioning units, and we had to have one summer in Oklahoma with no AC. Don't ever do that. That's bad. Somebody said to me yesterday, wow, it's so hot here. I was like, yeah, it's 61. It's not hot here, but that's fine. It's fine. with 100 degrees humidity and no AC. So then we decided we're going to take a big step of faith. And so we went and we talked to a local movie theater, and we said, we want to rent the movie theater. You know, and the Lord just opened door after door after door. And I felt most of the time like just like a failure as a pastor. But the Lord was opening doors I didn't see at the time. Okay? You know, it takes some level of courage to do this, okay? Because we deal with opportunities, not guarantees. The last thing I'm going to tell you about this passage I think is really important is that following Jesus will definitely take you out of your comfort zone. You're going to do some things that will make you very uncomfortable if you're going to follow the Lord. And that's just real life, okay? When I came here last, a little bit of a change since I was here in November, but I realized that I had let myself get pretty comfortable in some areas of my life. In some ways, I didn't really want to. And I was starting to notice like a gap. I don't know if you guys understand, like a gap between like what I felt like God was calling me to and kind of where I was drifting to. And I was really feeling that in a lot of ways in terms of discipline and some other stuff. And people kept coming to me, and this is what they'd say. They'd say, "Hey, man, you look tired." I was like, "You know why I look tired? It's because I'm tired." You know, I was traveling all the time. I was jet lagged quite a bit. I understand where Pastor Shannon is coming from. I flew 155,000 miles last year. And I was really just starting to get out of shape and have some other stuff. And when I came here in November, Pastor Shannon took me to go and work out with Lindsay, and they about killed me. And so, which was fine, no problem. And I was like, man, I really need to do some stuff. I really need to make some changes in my life. And I went to Japan in December, and my buddy's running marathons. He's like, just sign up for a race. I was like, I don't run, man. You know? In fact, Beth had got me one of those stickers. You guys see the stickers that people put up on their car? Mine said 0.0, I don't run. In fact, I started running, and I posted online about it, and one of my friends messaged me and said, "Hey, man, I think your Facebook's been hacked." He was serious, too. Like, he wasn't joking. He just was like, "Hey, you need to check your password. Someone's on your thing, like, posting about running, and we know better." But, you know, honestly, like, I really felt like I need to make some changes in my life. I need to close the gap, even if it's uncomfortable for me, because what I found was I was just deflecting some uncomfortable stuff. And this isn't like a fitness talk, but it was a part for me. It was a step for me. And so I signed up for my son and I to do a Tough Mudder race, okay? And I did a Tough Mudder back in 2015, and I trained for it by doing nothing, which was stupid. And so I said, I'm going to just train so I don't embarrass myself in front of my 14-year-old son, because he'll never let me forget it. And I started to train and started to do stuff. And in the beginning, I told people, hey, I don't run. But really, the truth was, I couldn't run. I wasn't capable of running. And so I had to start with like this like super, super slow thing, and then just slowly make some changes in my life. And I realized that this was a lot like a lot of people are, just as a metaphor for the rest of their life. They look at this and they say, hey, he's talking about missions. He's talking about engaging and reaching the community, and I can never do that. You can't do it today, but you can take a step today. You can get a little uncomfortable today, and you'll find yourself with some change, you know? You know, I ran a half marathon Sunday last week. It was the second one I've done this year. I've got a couple more coming and a full marathon. You can pray for me. And I'm signed up for some other stuff, in part because, like, it was a step, man. It was a line in the sand of, like, I don't care if it's uncomfortable. I'm going to do it anyway, you know? And I had a choice to make. Remain in the comfortable life I knew, or take a huge and uncomfortable step that would open the doors for life I felt like God was calling me to. There are places in the world I felt like the Lord was opening doors, and I couldn't get there because I wasn't physically able to handle it. We're doing work in the mountains in Nepal. Okay? And there are places where these people live, and not everybody can get to them. And we're trying to get to them. There's work we're trying to do in the Middle East, and we can't get there for certain things, and so we're trying to work our way in. We're working with Syrian and Iraqi refugees in Jordan and in Lebanon and some of these other places. And as the Lord opens the door for this, I was like, I'm too tired. I can't do this. And I've realized, like, I've got to make some changes. I have to get uncomfortable to fulfill the mission God's called me to. It had nothing to do with running. That was just a step. And I think where we are for many people is you hear a story about someone like Peter, and you say, that's for other people. And I'm just telling you guys, it doesn't have to be for other people. It can be for who you are. You can be a person who takes a step today to do this. I mentioned this earlier, okay, but what we challenge people to do, we challenge them to pray, to send, and to go, right? To intentionally, like, seek out the stories of people who are doing kingdom work and invest in them in prayer, right? We're traveling all over the place. We have missionaries all over the place. Some we can talk about, some we kind of can't talk about because of where they are and what they're doing. I had a friend of mine killed for his faith sharing the gospel this year. And I can't talk about it because of where he is and some of the people that he was working with. And in addition to praying for people, we pray that people would get on board and help to send people. And whether that's through Project Doxa, which we would love and we will help you with that, or whether it's through somebody else or through the church or finding other missionaries to invest in, but saying, like, I'm going to financially and emotionally and energy, I'm going to invest in kingdom work. I'm going to help send kingdom people. And the last of these, and I know this sounds crazy for some of you, is to go. Across the street, across an ocean, go. And you say, but I couldn't do that. Yeah, you'd be surprised. Maybe you can. You know, we help set up teams for all kinds of people to go all over the place. We're taking teams to Mexico for a weekend to build a house because people can't get away for that long. And we had people come from Japan to Mexico for a weekend to build a house. Crazy. We're taking teams to Lebanon. We're taking teams to Romania and to Zambia and to Bolivia and to Nepal. And we've got people from all over the world going. Okay? You could be a part of this situation. Because here's the thing, okay? Like, when these things are happening, when you hear a story like this, when you see a passage like this, when you go through a series about reaching out, the temptation is to say, wow, that was really inspiring, but that's for the other guys. We'll even be, like, we'll even cheer when you do it. But this could be you. You can take a step today.